Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the War Room. We got Dez, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show and get the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five doing prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4-26 saw the war in Kuwait. It's the War Room with five nights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yo, what's up out there in War Room land? What's going on, fellas?
What's up, what's
hey,
up, what's yeah. up?
Oh, hi, oh, hi, oh, hi!
Yo, sometimes I forget I gotta start talking. You know, I be jamming to the theme music. Theme
late game, the professional.
Yeah. But jump right into this. What's up, listeners? Happy Thursday. We'd like to welcome you all to the War Room. We're your hosts. I'm Devin. I'm here at the War Room Roundtable with Jimmy, Paul, Kill, and B. Austin. We got another great show for you tonight. We'll discuss the stories from week 4 of the NFL season. We'll also talk postseason baseball with our baseball correspondent, Brent Beasley. Then later in the second hour, we'll discuss the legacy of Washington Redskins quarterback Donovan McNabb. Basically, we're going to try to, you know, put this whole thing to bed. I think we kind of talked Donovan a little too much on the show. Frankly, I'm a little tired of talking about him. We're going to talk in a very objective way, get it out of the way, put it to bed once and for all. So, you know, this is your last chance. Call in, say what you got to say, get it off your chest. And, of course, you know, other than that, we'll just try to discuss as many of the stories of the week in sports that we can squeeze into this 2 hours. So, as usual, we like to hear from you guys, so feel free to call in with your opinions when we open up the phone lines. If you got a question, a comment, a beef, which you probably will when we start talking about Donovan, make sure you call in and voice it at 323-410-0012. So let's get this thing started and jump right on into these birthdays.
It's my birthday! Yay!
All right, let's talk about some birthdays here. Let me throw them out this week, Dev. Let's see. The first birthday I got, let's talk about James D. Ray Morton, also known as Johnny Morton.
Johnny Morton.
When I say, what do you think about Johnny Morton?
Me, I'll say this. Of course, you know, he was a receiver for the Lions. I remember probably about 4 or 5 years ago, dude tried to fight in MMA. But after his first fight, he got in trouble because he refused to take a steroid test. So Johnny Morton is probably on that Barry Bonds. Who's next?
Absolutely. Now that you mentioned that, let me tell y'all real quick what I think about Johnny Morton. Y'all know I'm a huge MMA fan. I remember when Johnny Morton tried to fight in MMA. He actually fought and got knocked out in 38 seconds. And then he got fined 100 G's for not taking it after a fight drug test. But he actually tested positive before the fight for steroids. So who knows what he's going to be playing football. Yeah, he definitely
How you going to be on steroids and get knocked the F out?
Yo, 38 seconds nonetheless. Be Austin, what you want to say about Johnny Morton?
You know, there are those players in every sport where you kind of you peak them and they rise above mediocrity occasionally and you think that there's something special. Johnny Morton is one of them dudes. I can't tell whether he's a great bum or kind of a bummy good player. And he was too pretty to play football, so he's definitely too pretty to rumble.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Yeah. Dr. Bayon.
No rainbow.
What you got to say about Johnny Morton?
Johnny Morton, what I remember about Johnny Morton is being the third wide receiver on those powerful Lions teams when Scott Mitchell was the quarterback and Barry Sanders was the running back. I remember 1 year in the mid-90s, Brett Perryman caught 4,000 yards, Herman Moore caught for like 1,500 yards, and Johnny Morton had 700 in their run and shoot. And then he moved on to Kansas City and was kind of like first and second receiver between Gonzalez and Eddie Kinnison. And then he actually acted. He was an actor for a short stint, and then he went into MMA. And
dude, shot MMA.
Yeah, it's crazy because you named all those Lions, according to the masses, Barry Sanders never played with anybody. But that's neither here nor there. Let's move on. Let's talk about Priest Holmes. Priest Holmes turns 37 this week.
My birthday!
Yay! Priest Holmes. When I think of Priest Holmes, I think of those early fantasy football years when there was one year when Priest Holmes was the best player in fantasy football. That's all I think of Priest Holmes. His career, well, him being good was actually short-lived.
Yo, I swear we're thinking on the same wavelength because when I think of Priest Holmes, I think of the same thing. It was a couple years in fantasy where, yo, because I've been playing fantasy for a while, when whoever had Priest Holmes won the championship. In like two or three different seasons. That's the only thing I think of fantasy football when I think of Priest Holmes, because he was a beast. B. Austin, what do you think about Priest Holmes?
Priest was, for a minute, he was real nice. I definitely think that he's underrated, and I feel bad for his career, because I think if he didn't have to sit the bench in Ravenland in Baltimore behind the other bull, he would have had a 10,000-yard career.
How about you?
I think he was a weird dresser.
His gear weak. I just remember like a 3-year stretch of him just getting a bunch of touchdowns. Like every time you turned on the replay of the Chiefs game, he was scoring 1, 2, 3 touchdowns, posing, and then all of a sudden, that was it. He injured his hip, and then that was it.
He had like 100 touchdowns a year.
A lot of catches.
All right, let's move to the next cat. Let's talk about Evan Longoria. He turns 25.
My birthday! Yay!
Yo, when I think of Evan Longoria, I actually start to think that this dude might be the next great choker. I remember when he was in the World Series against the Phillies and the ball couldn't buy a hit. Now, even though we were going to report this in a few minutes, you know, his Rays are down 2-0 to the Rangers in the first round of the MLB playoffs. And I'm pretty sure he's not doing anything again.
Okay, well, real quick, when I think of Evan Longoria, actually I don't. I think of Eva Longoria.
So, I used to think that was his sister or something.
Yeah, me too. Like, what is up with that? Anyway, B. Austin, what you got on Evan Longoria?
Kind of stole my thunder because I, like everybody else, go right to Eva.
Yeah, like, what is that? How
she ain't
about
got
you,
nothing
Dr.
to do
Bayon?
With you.
Dr. Bayon.
Yeah, it's crazy. Since their names are basically spelled similar, I automatically think of Eva Longoria Parker when I hear Evan Longoria. There you go.
You gave it
all right,
Parker.
Let's move on to the last cat. Well, my last cat that I want to talk about this week is Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson turns 34, so that's
my birthday. Yay!
Chuck Woodson, shut down. That's all that comes to my mind. Who's next?
B. Austin.
Good. Maybe even great, but a little overrated.
Wow. Bayon.
Overrated.
I think of him, you know, at Michigan in the Heisman running and winning as a DB. And then I also think of him just holding down the cornerback spot. I guess being a top five corner for the past decade.
Well, like when I think of somebody that's lucky to get out of Oakland, because who knows where his career would have been if not for him getting out of Oakland. Like, you know, he remade his whole career. So that's what I think of. That's the last birthday I have.
All right. Well, I got a bonus birthday today. This person's birthday was actually on Monday. But I just felt that we had to get to this cat. I'm going to let Jimmy go first on this one because this guy is a former Laker. He turned 47 on Monday. Jimmy, what you got to say about Mr. A.C. Green?
A.C. Green. When I think of A.C. Green, I think of Jerry Curl Juice. And I don't even know how to phrase this. I don't want to offend anybody, you know. But A.C. Green was known for something that everybody – As a matter of fact, I'm going to let B. Austin talk about it. I'm not even going to say,
How are you able to play in the greatest organization in the world with some of the greatest groupies in the world and not get no tang? How is that possible? So hence we know why he played so long, because the brother was backed up.
Yeah, he was hype all the time.
And he wore that silly beanie on his head that I wanted Sir Charles to knock off his block for wearing that beanie on his head, man. I was very disappointed in AC, man.
Dr. Bayon, AC Green.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I look at when I think about AC Green, I know as a kid, you know, going up playing basketball, you just kind of like, man, this guy's in the NBA, and he's not having, you know, premarital relations with females. And I just thought that was kind of, you know, odd, kind of strange. But then, you know, after becoming a Christian and getting baptized in 1998, while I was playing for Howard, I wound up being a, you know, a college basketball player who wasn't having premarital relations with females. So I went from one
again,
side
AC.
Of like, yeah, there you go. I was like, okay, I can kind of feel where AC's coming from. Pause. And but I never would have expected to be living that kind of lifestyle. But, you know, that's how it is.
But you was never a noodle.
All right, well, we're going to move on to what happened today while you guys were on the grind. Actually, some of these stories happened as far back as, like, Tuesday. Some of the stories are from last night, but it's our show, and we can do whatever we want. So, first, I'll just update y'all on the MLB postseason. Of course, you saw the three games yesterday. The Phillies are up 1-0 on the Reds. Texas actually up 2-0 on Tampa Bay after their 6-0 win today. The Yankees beat the Twins in a comeback win last night, so they're up 1-0. And who was that other series? Atlanta and San Francisco, they play tonight at 9:30 in their Game 1 matchup. While y'all were on the grind today, Ted Leonsis, owner of the Wizards. Remember last week or the week before I told you guys he was thinking about taking the team back to the colors, the red, white, and blue? Now he's even considering changing the name back to the Bullets. You know, that was a big thing down here in D.C. They thought it wasn't politically correct for the team to be called the Bullets, especially because everybody
who cares about politically correct.
Yo, but is he going to keep
they
Gilbert on
the
roster
for like 10 years?
The team name to the Bullets?
What'd you
say? Gilbert still going to be on the roster? I said, is Gilbert still going to be on the roster if they're called the Bullets?
He has to be. He can be the mascot.
No, that's what I'm just saying. Something you got to think about. That's something you got to think about.
He can be the mascot.
Speaking of Gilbert, I wasn't even going to say anything about this story. I mentioned it last night when I was co-hosting Ball Control. Arenas, he's basically saying that he's going to show with the guy John Wall the ropes for how to be an NBA star and then move on. So he's basically saying that he knows he's no longer going to be a Wizard, you know, for the too distant future. So here's his quote. He said, I'm out to teach John Wall the ropes. I'm here just to play beside him. He's Batman, and I'm Robin. He sounds a lot like Ocho Cinco right now. So what y'all think about Gilbert and what he's saying right now? Is it just talk?
Well, personally, I think Gilbert, I think he's being sent a politically correct thing to John Wall, but I guarantee at the end of the day, when looking at box score, he's going to be leading that team in shots put up and last-second shots and clutch shots.
No doubt.
But he'll keep saying, you know, he's Batman and I'm Robin.
Yeah, that's his new thing. That's his new media persona. First, he doesn't want to talk to the media at all. You know, now he's just trying to say little things that put him in the background. That's his thing this year. But
every year he seems to have a thing.
Basically.
I'm gonna weigh in. I know it's we're doing our news, but you know, Gilbert is a personal favorite of mine. No rainbow in terms of NBA players, and I just hope he does well this season, man. I think it's admirable for him to want to take the ball under his wing. I think that's a good thing, and I think that he may even mean what he's saying. But when he gets on the court, he's one of those dudes where the killer is in his veins. And the murderer will come out. And we're going to see 25 a game, probably about Five boards, five assists.
Okay. All right, we're moving on. The ball, Darrell Revis, he's still talking smack about Randy Moss because, you know, since he's with the Vikings now, they actually have to go head-to-head again, and Revis hasn't played since the first matchup. He said in the first matchup, you know, Randy came out going kind of hard. He said by the second half, he could see that he was back to those slouch tendencies where he wasn't really going hard. So, I mean, it's not he didn't crack Revis's head the first time, but he made probably the most spectacular play of the season so far. So, I mean, I know Revis is the island, but he might want to be quiet right now.
I like Darrell Revis a lot, Pauls. I think he is probably the top one or two corners in the league. But, you know, at his expense, Randy Wilt Chamberlain, that dude on the football field. So, as Kobe once said to J.R. Smith, don't shake that tree. That leopard will fall on you.
All right, did y'all? Oh, y'all, somebody else got something about Revis? Or we can move on real quick.
Yeah, well, I think Revis, like him getting hurt after Moss made that exceptional one-handed catch, and then Revis going out the game saying, you know, I pulled my hamstring. I thought that was a weak move. I'm like, okay, so just because he happened to burn you like that, now your hamstring is hurt.
Yeah, I thought it was a little embellished. And then he milked it because he stayed out for like the next 2 weeks. But did y'all hear about Roberto Alomar's wife? She's accusing him of having unprotected sex with her while being HIV positive. Now, this is the same chick. A few years ago, some other woman accused him of this. She was only his girl. His wife now was his girlfriend at the time. And she came out on his behalf when the other chick accused him of the same thing, saying that it was a vile lie. Now she's coming out saying the exact same thing that the first accuser said. What's up with that?
Whoa, Roberto. No, Roberto.
Yo, that's crazy.
Slow down.
Slow
down.
Word. All right, and the last one, while y'all were on the grind, Tiger back in the news. The husband of the porn star, Devin James, that Tiger was having sex with, yo, this dude is taking pre-orders for a sex tape that Tiger made with his wife. They said that it was shot with his equipment, so I'm assuming since she must be her producer, director. And he says, I quote, "You can tell it's him, and he's quite dirty." Yo.
Tiger.
Yo. Anybody got anything on that?
It sounds like somebody trying to catch
it. Exactly. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
That's all.
He,
look, he
got to
get in where he fit it. It already happened. He knows it happened, so
he
figured he must
make a couple of
dollars.
All right. Well, that's what happened, everybody, while y'all were on the grind.
The royal penis is clean, Your Highness.
Yo, let's move on to our next segment. Let's do our Pass the Rock segment. For those who are listening for the first time, Pass the Rock is a chance for all the hosts to vent and pretty much say whatever's on their mind relating to sports or not sports, whatever it may be. Just a chance, a couple minutes for us to just talk about whatever's on our mind. And, you know, I'm going to start it off for us and then I'm, you know, pass the rock after that. But let's get started. Here's my beef this week. And I have plenty of beefs, but here's something I want to talk about. I want to talk about pass interference in the NFL. Mm-hmm. The average fan watches football and enjoys the action, the hard-hitting pause, all the excitement, and believes that NFL football is the greatest sport. It has become America's favorite sport by far. But from an existentialist point of view, I believe that pro football is a great game, but there are certain rules that sometimes ruin an entire game. Rarely will you hear me say that NCAA college football has it right, considering how many things I personally believe they do wrong. Watching football over the past couple of weekends has made me realize they have at least one thing right, and that is the penalty for defensive pass interference. In the college game, the offense gets 15 yards and an automatic first down on a defensive pass interference. When you juxtapose that rule with the pro game, you will see what I mean. In the NFL, when a defensive player is called for pass interference, the offensive team not only gets an automatic first down, but they get the ball at the spot where the interference took place. That's a joke. There's a problem with how the NFL handles pass interference on so many levels. First off, wide receivers are so much bigger than cornerbacks these days, Paul, and the rules are in favor of the wideout due to changes in the game. Not only that, but these 40- and 50-yard pass interference penalties are causing teams to lose games. Most of the calls made by the officials are subjective anyway. I mean, if they wanted to, they can call holding on almost every play. With that being said, games shouldn't be lost due to bogus pass interference calls. Just this past week, I saw my own Broncos get a 49-yard pass interference call that helped them win the game. A 49-yard penalty? Seriously? If I were a struggling offense, I would just throw the ball up and force the Zebras to make a call. This current rule is deplorable. I understand the NFL's need for scoring, but for the biggest players of the game to be pass interference calls is asinine. I just hope a playoff game or a Super Bowl doesn't get decided on a pass interference call. But if it does, remember, you heard me complaining on 10-7-2010. I'm nice. Anyway, I'm going to pass the rock to Dev, so it's your chance to, you know, say whatever it is you want to say.
Yo, that's kind of interesting that you, that was your topic, because mine is kind of similar, but it's in another league. So on Thursday, September 23rd, at the referees' annual meeting in Jersey City, New Jersey, the NBA announced the new expanded guidelines for technical fouls, which will now include, quote, overt player reactions to officials' calls. In addition to the already bogus reasons the referees call techs, they'll now be calling technical fouls for the following reasons. Players making aggressive gestures such as air punches, etc., anywhere on the court. Demonstrative disagreement, such as when a player incredulously raises his hands or smacks down his arm to demonstrate how he was fouled. Running directly at an official to complain about a call. Excessive inquiries about a call, even in a civilized tone. Even in a civilized tone. That doesn't even make sense. Using body language to question or demonstrate displeasure. And the last one, taking, quote-unquote, the long pass to the official. In other words, walking across the court to make their case. Now, I'm the first person who'll tell you that I can do without seeing all the constant whining, bitching, and moaning to the officials, but I'd be a hypocrite if I did so. In my time as an athlete, I surely reacted to some horrible officiating. However, these new set of rules infringe on the human element of the game. Humans make mistakes, and emotional reactions to perceived wrongs are primary traits of human behavior. Of course, there's a line that needs to be drawn when it comes to how much one should, quote-unquote, demonstrate after a call. But reading between the lines of these new rules, NBA, much super-athletic, emotionless drones over naturally emotional human beings. Trust me, the enforcement of these rules will eventually go way overboard, as they started down that path already. Last night in a preseason game between the Phoenix Suns and the Toronto Raptors, Grant Hill and Reggie Evans were given second technicals and ejected from the game for, wait for it, slapping each other on the butts.
What the hell is that?
WTF. After previous harmless altercation between the two teams on a prior play, Reggie Evans fouled Grant Hill on an attempted drive to the basket, accidentally tipping
the score.
Grant Hill got up, as Reggie Evans mentioned for, as Reggie Evans was motioning for a traveling violation and slapped Reggie on the butt. As Grant walked away, Reggie returned the butt slap, which in turn prompted Grant Hill to come back one last time to get the final butt slap. At this point, referee Bill Kennedy was motioning for both players to leave the floor. They were both ejected. This referee is already in, if I may borrow a phrase that I read earlier, mid-season overreaction form. I can't tell if this is a result of the new tightening of the technical foul rules or if this official is just a major homophobe. Maybe it was Tim Hardaway in disguise. Who knows? So from there, I'm going to go ahead and pass that rock around the back, starting the break, to Dr. Akil Bayon.
Man, that's interesting. I think that refs should just not let people like Kobe and MJ and all these guys curse them out without getting text. But then you got a guy like Rashid throwing his hands up, getting text. I mean, I think they should just bounce it out and not make it. Yeah, not making
it. Looks like Rashid got out the game in the right at the right time.
Exactly. All right, now today my pass to Rock has to do with a topic we haven't covered yet here in War Room Land. Cycling and doping. Now we've all known about Lance Armstrong winning back to 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 back Tour de France titles. And we've all heard his name in blood doping allegations. Now, some of you may know what blood doping is, but if you don't, here's the definition. It is the practice of boosting the number of red blood cells, or RBCs, in the bloodstream in order to enhance athletic performance. Because they carry oxygen from the lungs to the muscles, more RBCs in the blood can improve an athlete's aerobic capacity, better known as the VO2 max. And endurance. Now, in the late 80s, an advance in medicine led to an entirely new form of blood doping involving the hormone EPO. And now you have a British cyclist in the 2000s, David Miller. He was stripped of his world time trial championship after pharmaceutical EPO was found in his possession. You've also had in 2007. Bjarne Riis, Rolf Aldag, and Eric Zabel, and Brian Holm, all former members of the telecom cycling team, admitted to using EPO during their cycling careers in the mid-1990s. Riis also relinquished his title as champion of the 1996 Tour de France. And if those of you, Americans out there may remember Greg LeMond, he was the American, basically Lance Armstrong, before Lance Armstrong. And no blood doping has been tied to him. So he's actually going against guys like Floyd Landis, who have been caught blood doping, and Lance Armstrong, saying that, man, you know what? I was the clean guy. Everybody else was dirty. And moving on, in Spanish cyclist Iban Mayo, he was accused of blood doping. It also says here they would do blood transfusions. In the case of detecting blood transfusions, a test of determining homologous blood transfusions from a donor to a doping athlete has been used since 2000. So let's say if you have good blood and my blood is, you know, not as good, I'll say, hey, you know, do a blood transfusion. I'll give you X amount of money. I can store your blood, and when it's ready for me to go, I can add it to my blood, and I can be superhuman while I'm riding in the Tour de France. Now, blood doping is so prevalent, the military in 1993, U.S. Special Forces commanders at Fort Bragg started experimenting with blood doping so they can put it into soldiers so they can have better endurance and be able to be better soldiers while they're out there fighting. And it said because of the increases in the blood's capability to carry oxygen. In 1998, the Australian Defense Forces approved this technique for Special Air Service Regiment. Now, you also had cases where in hockey, you had a 19-year-old New York Rangers hockey prospect, a Russian hockey player. He was engaged in blood doping for 7 months, and then he died in 2008 after collapsing on the bench during the game. You had a German speed skater and five-fold Olympic gold medalist, Claudia Petschin, was banned for 2 years in 2009 for alleged blood doping, and this led to the development of the World Anti-Doping Agency, and is run by President Dick Pound, pause, has stated a belief that anti-doping passport will be in widespread use within 3 years, although not in time. Now, the negative effects of blood doping, as I conclude, it is the simple act of increasing the number of RBCs in the bloodstream makes blood thicker, which can also make it clot more readily. This increases the chances of heart attack, stroke, and pulmonary embolism, which has been seen in cases where there is too much blood reintroduced into the bloodstream. Blood contamination during preparation or storage is another issue. Contamination was seen in one in every 500,000 transfusions of RBCs in 2002. Blood contamination can lead to sepsis or an infection that affects the whole body. Now, you athletes out there that may be listening, you may think, man, if I do some blood doping, I can increase my times. I may be able to get a scholarship, or I may be able to own the courts or the football field in flag football. It's not worth it. And these cyclists, they're paying the price, either physically or in their pockets, or with their reputation by being found guilty. And for my pass, that's my pass to rock, and I'm going to, I caught it on the break, and I'm going to kick it out to the wing to Mr. B. Austin.
Hot block commander in the building.
Wow. Very, very, very interesting PTR, Dr. Bayon. I certainly appreciate that information. What was the name of the gentleman that headed up the World Anti-Doping Commission?
His name was Mr. Dick Pound.
Pause. This week I want to talk about the plethora of QB changes that have occurred in the NFL, and we're already we're only in week five, or we're going into week five. We've seen changes in Philadelphia, obviously. We've seen changes on the West Coast with Tom Cable becoming real fed up rather quickly with one Jason Campbell soup and inserting Gradkowski. We've seen Trent Edwards get out of there for the fiery Harvard dude. Shout out to the Ivy League. We're now hearing talk in Miami that after the loss or embarrassment on Monday Night Football, that noodle-armed Chad Pennington may be taking over the helm for Chad Henne. That was quick. We've seen Matt Moore, I guess, be outed. Obviously, we've got the travesty, which is the Cleveland Browns. We see Seneca Wallace taking over the helm at QB, and he's a wide receiver.
Derek Anderson got benched.
We've got Derek Anderson getting benched, thanks, Dev, in the desert. And I'm not even sure who's taking over QB for the Cards. It's Mac Hall, right? It's like some no-name. Now, my beef really isn't, you know, I was doing this segment, and I was doing a little bit of research late in the afternoon, and I really didn't have a beef until I kind of thought about it. And are these, I mean, I want to pose a question. Are these moves by these head coaches knee-jerk reactions, or are they founded in wanting to actually win? You know, obviously they want to win, and they feel as though, you know, they'll have a better chance in trying something else. But don't you have to allow time for chemistry to develop amongst your offense? Don't you have to allow a QB the opportunity to fail so that he can get back up again and learn what he has in his tank? I mean, if you're constantly looking over your shoulder and you're the most important offensive piece on the chessboard, it's automatically going to affect your play. And then you have players that are looking to not lose the game as opposed to going out. I'm going to pass the rock right now. I'm going between the legs, pause, behind the bat. I'm up in the air for the leg. Oh, duck down, dish off. Brother PJ, take that rock.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, Brother B. Austin. Yeah, man, it's crazy. It's an epidemic out there. I think a lot of coaches are scared to death of failure, and, like, they put such a strong precedent on winning that when things start going wrong, they just get schizophrenic and start pulling people out. But it's tough, man. We see what happened here in Philly. But this week, I just want to get something off my chest, man. It's been bothering me for, like, the last year. I say year and four games right now. And it's the Eagles starting left tackle, Jason Reynard Peters. He's a 6'4", 340-pound heap of heated waste matter. His history of careless false start penalties is nothing short of egregious. He's basically a penalty machine. This fraud is one of the most overrated and overpaid offensive linemen in NFL history, and he stinks. In other words, he's a bum. It's a crime that Peters made the Pro Bowl in his first season with the Eagles after signing a six-year, $60.6 million contract, making him the highest-paid left tackle in football. So how does this mutt show his appreciation? By leading the team in penalties with 11 for 178 yards. There's a fine line between a quick start and a false start, between protecting the quarterback and putting your team at a competitive disadvantage. The Eagles' starting left tackle hasn't found a way to successfully toe that line since coming to Philadelphia. See, Peters puts a premium on getting off the line quickly, maybe too much of a premium. What this idiot does too often is leave a second or two before the ball is snapped, especially on the road when a silent snap count is employed. Four of his six false starts last season came away from home, two came in the season opener in Carolina, and two more came in Kansas City during the starter's preseason finale.
It's a silent count. It's not a big deal. We're just watching his head turn. If it's on two, it's on two. If it's on three, it's on three. It's no big deal. I get off the rock. If you watch my tape, that's what I do.
says Peter. Riddle me this, you big dummy. Sure, you get off the rock, but what good is it if you're too busy, if you're too early, you get penalized and move the offense back 5 yards? Let's take a trip back down memory lane to Sunday's game against the Redskins. On Peter's first penalty, Cobb hit Owen Schmidt for a first down, inside the Redskins 35 in the second quarter. Thanks to Peters, that play was negated. Later, Peters wiped out a decent Cobb scramble from the Eagles 39 in the third quarter, and that drive later ended with a Shady McCoy fumble. But after two bonehead penalties in Sunday's loss, when asked about the exotic number of false start and holding penalties against the offensive line this season, this bumbling heap of sludge responds,
"Hey, nobody perfect. Not even center of the seat that one had penalties.
Oh, yeah, Jason? Is that the best you could come up with? Really?" Determined not to relinquish his penalty title, Peter filled his quota against the Packers. Add a holding call to his week one performance, and the reigning league leader in penalties is well on his way to repeat as champion. Hey, Jason, if you're listening, find the nearest pit full of unfortunate and take a dive in it. That's all I got. With that, I do a double pump 360 degree down the lane on Patrick Chewing Paul's dunk to end the game.
And the crowd goes wild. All right, B. Austin, before we all right, the crowd don't want to shut up. Before we before we bring out our guest today, just let everybody know how to get in contact with us. Let everybody know how to get in contact with us real quick. All right, I'll do it then. Y'all can check out our website at www.warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company or the show. If you'd like to send an email to one of the hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses are on that page. You can become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports. Follow us on Twitter at www.twitter.com/warroomsports. For general inquiries, you can email us at info@warroomsports.com. You can join the chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the war room. To get into the chat room, all you got to do is sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you can sign in through your Facebook or Twitter account. While you're at it, click on favorites, make the War Room one of your favorite Blog Talk Radio shows, and get updates about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show if you have any. To call into the show and speak with the host, is dial 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. Pressing 1 is like raising your hand. We might see you, call on you. You might get get whatever you need to get off your chest. So from here, we're going to go into our MLB playoff discussion with our special guest. The playoffs have been interesting, to say the least, in the first day or so. So we're going to bring on our special baseball correspondent from the War Room, Mr. Brent B-Easy Easley. Brent, what's up, man?
What's up, man? I was enjoying the PJ rant. I want to hear him rant a little bit more about Jason Peters.
Yeah. That was crazy.
Hey, my fault, Brent. Yo, I had to get that off my chest, man. He's been driving me nuts every game from laundry on the field. He's walking back, like Wildman, looking up in the sky. I'm like, yo, that's so careless.
Yo, he called the ball a mustard.
That goes to show you that Pro Bowls are a little bit overrated.
Yeah, Pro Bowls.
Exactly,
yeah.
Man.
Overrated.
Let's get into this
MLB playoff discussion. You know, we'll keep it brief. you know, until we get to the last topic, which is the most important. But the division series. Basically, let's just talk about, you know, what you think of the series. Basically, do a little preview. It's a little easy for us to do now since they already started, so we kind of got a beat on where they're heading. But Brent,
the Rays are making me look bad.
Yeah, yeah. Let's start with that one. The Texas versus Tampa. Like, what were you thinking yesterday before the series started?
Well, before the series started, I was thinking, well, the Rays had a winning record against every division in the AL, road and home.
Right.
Offense is really good, led by MVP candidate Evan Longoria, Carl Crawford, who's one of the best all-around players in the AL. And the pitching is led by David Price, who's also the Cy Young candidate, and Matt Garza and James Shields, who has playoff experience, World Series experience also, too. Texas, led by Mr. Cliff Lee, from Phillies fame from last year, first time in the playoffs last year, dominated pretty well. MVP candidate Josh Hamilton, who should be the MVP this year, who also won the AL batting title. Nelson Cruz, Ian Kinsler, and Vlad Guerrero have like a renaissance of his career this year also, too, because everybody thought he was on the way down. I've been shocked by what's going on. I thought the Rays would handle them. The Cliff Lee game, I thought Texas would win that game, but I thought that the Rays would come back today.
Not too surprised about that because we kind of know what Cliff Lee working with.
Yeah, yeah. I thought they would win that game. I thought Texas would win that game, but today was a real shock to me. Texas really dominated the game. And it's not looking good for the Rays now because they're going to have to win three straight, and they're going to have to go against Cliff Lee in game four again also, too. So I picked the Rays in five in that series, but it's not looking good.
Not going to happen. All right, well, we can move on to actually a fresh one because Atlanta, San Francisco actually haven't started yet. They start tonight at 9:30. What's your take on that series? Who you got winning that? Is the Bobby Cox story going to continue?
That's a tough one because I think a lot of people are overlooking the Braves. It's their Bobby Cox last year, and I think they're going to put on a good performance in the playoffs. Their pitching staff is underrated, if you ask me. Tim Hudson is pretty good. Derek Lowe is pretty good. Tommy Hansen is pretty good also too. And you know, Lowe and Hudson have playoff experience with Boston and Oakland. So, but the Giants, they're led by Tim Lincecum, Matt Cain, Sanchez, and you could throw in Zito, but I don't think Zito probably will pitch in this series. So Giants pitching is top notch. They had a combined ERA of 3.2, a little bit over three runs. Their offense is a little bit shaky. They're led by MVP candidate Buster Posey, who's the catcher. Who should get a lot of votes for MVP, but Atlanta is they're led by their rookie of the year candidate Jason Hayward.
Yeah, they're
and
Benji Molina's spot early in the season.
Well, he took Benji Molina. Molina plays for Texas now, which has been turned out.
Yeah,
to
he moved on.
Dividends for them also too.
San Francisco, right?
Benji Molina started the season with San Francisco, and then they called Buster Posey up, and they traded Molina. And Posey became the catcher, so that's what happened with catching situation in San Francisco.
I think they could pretty much chalk the Lincecum game up as a win.
Oh, you think so? What?
Yeah,
you'd be surprised, You'd be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't finish the season as strong as, you know, we're used to seeing him, but postseason, I think it's about that time. So, move on to talk about one of your least favorite teams, the New York Yankees. New York and Minnesota.
They one of my least
favorite. I thought, actually, because I was co-hosting Ball Control Radio last night, and when I was asked, I was put on the spot, I kind of thought Minnesota was going to at least take that first game, which they should have. They had the lead. You know, they blew it. They caught CeCe on a night where he really didn't have much control, and they didn't take advantage of it. So what do you think is going to happen with that series?
Well, my feeling is this. I think the Yankees first of all, you have to respect the Yankees. The Yankees are the defending champions. We have Jeter, Posada, Cano, Teixeira, A-Rod. That's probably the most potent lineup in all of Major League Baseball 1 through 9. You got to respect them. The pitching is a little bit shaky. You got CC.
I don't have to respect them.
Pettit is coming off an injury. Phil Hughes, he's an 18-game winner this year, but he hasn't had the postseason experience as a starter. So their pitching staff is a little bit shaky. But the Minnesota Twins pitching staff with Pavano and who else? Lariano, Pavano, and there's somebody else that I can't think of, Blackburn. Yankees offense, they should be able to handle those pitchers. So I think the Yankees offense is going to carry them in this series. So I think the Yankees will beat the Twins in probably four games.
How big is the injury to Justin Morneau? How much is that going to weigh on the Twins?
Well, they actually been doing well without Justin Morneau, and he had the concussion. He had the concussion symptoms. He's having problems. He's not going to play in the playoffs at all. They thought he was going to come back in the ALCS, but if they made it that far, but he's not going to play at all. So they had the second best record in all of the Major League Baseball after the Phillies.
That's right.
Even with Mano. Say it again.
I said that's right after the Phillies.
After the Philadelphia Phillies. Yeah, so they had the second best record in all of baseball after the All-Star break. So him not being there is not that big of a deal for them. They've still been able to put on a good show and been able to win games without him. So I don't foresee that being a problem.
Okay, well, we're going to move on to the Philly-Cincinnati series. But actually, we interviewed somebody earlier with a prediction. So I'm going to go ahead and play that real quick before I ask you about it.
Right.
Prediction? Yes, prediction. Pain.
That was my man, Clubber Ling, being asked about the Philly series. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about it. Doc Holliday, first
I can
ever
talk about my favorite player.
Performance. You get to talk about him. What were you thinking last night when you were watching that no-hitter that he threw?
Word. I heard Doc Holliday, your uncle.
First no hitter and since what, 54? Was it 54 or 56? It's in the 50s since Don Larsen's game against the Brooklyn Dodgers. Just unbelievable performance, man. He hit every part of the plate, inside, outside, up, down. Had the Cincinnati batters off balance. They weren't able to they talk about they should have been aggressive, like hit fastballs, but he wasn't throwing fastballs first pitch. Then when they think a fastball was coming, he threw a sinker, curveball, slider, whatever pitch he wanted to throw last night, he threw. So that series, I think the Reds are going to play the Phillies tougher than what a lot of people think, because each game they played this year was pretty close. The four games
they played here.
They led all of Major League Baseball in offense this year,
right,
with Joey Votto, who should be the MVP of the National League, Jay Bruce. And Scott Rowland, he's had a pretty good season. So
let me interject real quick while I'm talking about the Reds, because I just want to say that the Reds are frauds. They do have that offense, but that offense was built upon beating on bad teams. Look at their record and how they play against the best teams in the league. I don't think they've ever beat a first place team in the National League all season. They're a young team. They may be good in the future, but their ace couldn't be a number three on the Phillies. They're frauds. And another thing about them, if you watched the game yesterday, they didn't make him work for anything. Like this. I saw that Votto did one time. He stepped out of the batter's box, trying to throw him off his rhythm, but the rest of the team did none of that. They're frauds.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to say that. You can finish your saying, but the Reds are frauds. Anybody from Cincinnati, your team stinks and they're frauds. They shouldn't even be in the playoffs. That just goes to show you that making the playoffs doesn't make you a good team anyway.
What do you got looking like this, though? That's why, in my notes, I wrote down that the Phillies experience, that Cincinnati being a young team, don't have the experience as the Phillies do. And the Phillies, they throw what they call H2O now, drown the Reds with H2O. That's the line going on around here now. So with Holliday with the Jimmy pitch last night, I expect no different from Roy Oswalt and Cole Hamels, because all the Phillies top line pitchers have been on a roll, and especially in the month of September. And I expect no different.
The basket a tendency to fall asleep when Cole Hamels pitches for some reason.
but hopefully they get that straightened out.
Truthfully, Dev, I just think the Phillies are I'm not saying this because, you know, I'm you know, Philly fan, but I just think they're focused. Last year was a disappointment for them, and this year has been a complete focus from day one. They ran into a couple of lulls this year, but when September came around, end of August, September, when they had to catch the Braves, and they were 7 games behind the Braves in July, they seemed like they turned that switch on and been running over every team in the National League ever since then. Like, they haven't – I don't even think they really lost a series. If they did, it's been a couple series, if that. So I just think the Phillies are focused, ready to go, ready to win the championship to bring this parade back to Broad Street. That's what I really think.
So this,
they'll get rid of the Reds in 4 games. It won't be a sweep.
That was actually my next question. I was going to say prediction and how many games.
It'll be 4 games.
We probably talked to you before then again, but before we let you go, World Series, who makes it, who wins, how many games?
World Series, wouldn't it be like sweet irony if the Rangers play the Phillies in the World Series? And you get Cliff Lee versus Roy Holiday in game one?
That'd be crazy.
That would be crazy. I don't think it's going to happen, though.
Charlie
I
Manuel,
think it's going to be the Yankees.
Charlie Manuel wants the Yankees.
Yeah, that's what I think. I think it's going to be the Yankees, and I think it's going to be the Yankees and the Phillies again. I think home field is going to play a big part. I think it's going to play a big part in this in that series, and I think the Phillies are actually going to, because the Yankees pitching is a little bit shaky. It was really shaky this year. I think the Phillies should be able to control that series if they play the Yankees in the World Series. And I'm looking at about probably 5 games if they play the Yankees in the World Series.
You sound like
I got one question. I got one question before we let you go, Brent. Let me ask you a question before you finish. Let me ask you one question.
Uh-huh.
Where are we meeting at for the parade this year?
Same spot. Right after, when we come out the subway
same
up on the City Hall, we meet y'all right there.
Yeah. Right
here.
Okay, cool.
All right, well, thank
get
you, Brent. Thanks a lot for weighing in.
Lay down.
We're going to get you back on here before the World Series so we can talk about that. Hopefully it'll be a red World Series, and I ain't talking about Cincinnati. So we'll holler at you, brother. Thanks a lot.
No problem. Thanks a lot. Let me come on. I appreciate it.
All right.
All right, guys.
Brent Easley, everybody. That's the Black Buster only. But TJ.
Yeah.
Oh, no, never mind. I'm sorry. It's not even time for that. We're just gonna go right into this NFL talk real quick. I did that last time, skipping stuff and all that kind of stuff. We ain't gonna do that again.
That's cool.
We're gonna go right into this week 4 recap. A lot of things happened in week 4. Let's start out talking about that Sunday night game where the Giants defensive line basically ransacked the Bears and left Cutler, you know, even more wacky than he already was. First, the Giants. Y'all think you can get a consistent effort out of them? I mean, they've always been known to have a great pass rush. Is that going to be a consistent thing, or is that going to just show its head every once in a while?
Every once in a while. They're at 9-7, 8-18.
Yeah.
They're not consistent enough.
I mean, even if they were to be consistent, I still think they had too many holes. Other places on the on the defense and on the offense to be a viable contender, but I mean you never know though. Going into a game, you still have to account for that front line.
In my opinion, the problem is their running game, right? It's because their defense, if you look at the first couple of games, was on the field too much. Their offense needs to help their defense like stay off the field a little bit to stay fresh. When they're fresh, their front four is tough. But at the same time, Paul, if you're going, you know, 3 and out and putting them right back on the field, that's a problem. I thought I was watching NFL Blitz while watching that game. They were just, like, knocking Cutler around. It was crazy.
Bears really ought to be ashamed of themselves because...
Well, wait, hold up. Remember, we talked about the Bears last week, and Jimmy asked us, were the Bears for real? You know what I'm saying?
The Bears are who we thought they were. Not what we thought they were. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them.
All right, Denny. Like, my bad, guys.
Coach Green is a little upset.
Coach Green is a little upset.
I can say, what, 4 years later from that little rant that in that game, I'm not going to write them off after one loss just like I wasn't going to crown them after three wins, but the Bears last week were who I thought they were. I mean, they did lose their quarterback, but he isn't exactly the strength of the team at all times. So,
I would have to say that much like the Giants, their strengths lie on defense. And going back to the offensive side of the ball, it's really about consistency and identity. Really, when you look at both of those teams, you don't know what you're going to get week to week. You can't come out and say, all right, they're going to run it down our throat, no rainbow, or they're going to hit us, you know, with a great passing game. You don't know what you're going to get because, you know, you've got that turmoil in the backfield with Bradshaw and the big dude, Pauls. Jacobs throwing temper tantrums because he runs like the pitter-patter of little tiny feet. And it's like you really don't know what you're going to get. And on the Bears side, your man Cutler, yo, he just, his brain leaves his body sometimes on the field. So I think that's, it's really a disservice to the defenses that they have because the defenses are good. Not great, but they're good. You have that front four in New York, you know, you have decent, not great, but decent linebacker play, and you've got decent secondary play. But if you're on the field, as Jimmy alluded to, if you're on the field for more than, you know, I'd say 55% of the snaps, then you're going to get tired and you're going to get exposed.
Right. Do you guys see the Jags with that win over the Colts? Josh Scobie hit a 59-yard field goal as time expired. That
you need a little better puck to beat. You need a little better puck to beat the greatest quarterback in the universe. You need a little bit of luck.
Look, I put that on the coach because the greatest quarterback in the league did what he was supposed to do. They got
sure
the ball back with like, listen, they got the ball back with like a minute 40 left. They were down.
Mm-hmm.
He takes them down, scores a touchdown with 40 seconds left to spare. I'm like, damn, I'm not used to seeing nothing like that. Yo, so the Jags are basically content with letting the game go to overtime. So being greedy, your man, the coach of the Colts, calls a timeout, thinking that, oh, maybe we get the ball back since they want to, you know, go to overtime. So they line it up, like, whatever. They tried a 59-yard field goal, and he made it, won the game, walk it off. I mean, put that on the coach or what? I mean, because they were playing for overtime. It was really unnecessary for him to call that timeout, give them a chance to line up for a 59-yard field goal.
Great, great explanation, Dev. I totally agree. And I think that within divisions, when you have divisional games, you can – I don't want to say you can throw the record out because a good team is a good team, a bad team is a bad team. But because you're in the division, the Jaguars know the Colts. They see them twice a year. They sometimes, if, you know – if playoffs were in the picture for the Jaguars, they may even see them a third time. So they know their opponent, and they play them a lot tougher than most. I think that they just have the Colts number on some given Sundays.
Yeah, the Colts are going to have to go – they're going to have to reel off one of those runs because that makes them like 0-2 in the division now.
So that's an issue. But I'm not worried about them. You know, I'm not worried about them being a solid playoff contender. They certainly have holes on defense, and it's not fair to ask your QB to cover up the holes on your team. It's not fair to have to ask Peyton Manning to come out and score 40 points and 35 points every week, week in and week out. Why? Because you can't stop anyone. And if you can't stop the Jags, yo, come on.
Yo, well, I got something to say about that too. In terms of Jim Caldwell, like we don't know what kind of coach this guy is going to be. Because when you think about it, you show your coaching chops when your teams face adversity. Last year they were rolling. They were 13-0.
They're the last team like every year.
Exactly, but he set his players, and then you know they had a couple losses. But he's never had to face adversity. I mean, he's still playing with all of Tony Dungy's guys. So this will show what kind of coach he is. That was a mistake on his part, But we don't know what kind of coach he will be. I don't want to say he's not going to be, you know, a good coach, or he is going to be a good coach, but it's yet to be determined.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what's
those divisional games are tough. Just like Brad was saying, like just like styles make fights, matchups make games, because you know you're always going to get a tough game out of a divisional opponent. And I just think that because you saw what we did to the Jags. I mean, and then you look at you think like,
and
wow,
we not
how did the Colts?
Yeah,
right,
and we're not
exactly
going to beat the Colts.
And how did the Colts have that much trouble with them and end up losing to them? But it's just a divisional thing. Like, you can really never sleep on a divisional opponent because they know your scheme, they know your personnel, they know everything about you. I mean, you see them two times a year at least. So
I'm not like
you know,
the cliche guy. I'm not the cliche guy, but in divisional games, you really can use that cliche. You know, when these two teams get together, you can throw out the records, blah, blah, blah.
Well, but that really speaks to preparation. I think that we as fans, you know, of the game don't necessarily dive into the coaching and strategy side of it and don't really acknowledge or understand the amount of preparation that goes into an NFL game. So now when you talk about a divisional game, you're talking about that type of preparation happening twice a year, minimum. So you know, with that amount of film, that amount of preparation, that amount, yo, they know one another. They know one another.
What's up with
the
champs? They're winning games, they win them ugly, but what's up with the offense? The offense not looking, they're not looking really super.
Man, it's all about Reggie Bush, man.
hey, you can't really sleep on the importance of Reggie Bush, though. It's not just him and what he does statistically, but, you know, we've seen a Reggie Bush-type player who was, you know, a couple of steps better than Brian Westbrook. We saw him in Philly for all those years. Brian Westbrook was a threat who opened up the offense whether he got the ball or not. So, I mean, Reggie is, you know, he's not that yet, but that's his role. And they do miss him, even though his production isn't what everybody would expect from all the hype coming out of school. But I think it hurt a little bit.
Well, the Hot Block Commander was being facetious when he said Reggie Bush, because I think he's Reggie Bus still. I think that they still have a little bit of Super Bowl hangover, and they're kind of getting it together. Having Bourbon Street in your city, man, that's rough. You know what I'm saying? I know them boys is down there drinking them things, man. Tossing them back big time.
The voodoo juice.
They voodoo juicing it. I think it boils down to them having a little bit of a – remember, I, no offense to anybody from New Orleans, but you're a losing football city. So for them to have a win of that magnitude, they still partying.
I don't know about that. I think that Reggie Bush loss does hurt a lot. I know you were being smart, but he does draw a lot of attention. I saw a play in the first week where he went out the backfield. He had two linebackers sticking. No, I'm talking about in terms of the attention he draws on the field. You can't deny the attention this guy draws. Like, just like Dev said, certain players draw attention whether they're getting the ball or not. I mean, it's sort of like what Randy Moss does. Randy Moss opens it up for everybody to come underneath. And if you watch Reggie Bush, he does it. He draws so much attention. But, I mean, it's one good thing about this. Although they're struggling, they're still winning. They should be 4-0 if not for the kicker missing, like, a 2-yard field goal. I mean,
I saw a play like that. I saw what you were talking about. One morning I was watching the matchup show with Ron Jaworski and Merle Hyde. I think that's the best football show on TV. If you think you know something about football, you know, watch that. It comes on early Sunday morning. You can learn something. Yeah, they were showing plays where, like you said, Reggie Bush would run out of the backfield. He might not even be the fourth receiver in this play, but two linebackers followed him, and their backup tight end was wide open. So, he's making other cats better than, you know, he's basically overrating other cats because everybody swears that the Saints have so many weapons. But, you know, you have a great quarterback and you have a great decoy, you can do that kind of stuff. Now, I'm not saying all this to sing the dude's praise because in comparison to all the hype he got coming out of college, and in college he was a beast, but he's nowhere near the player that, you know, they thought he was going to be, and, you know, everybody called the Texans stupid for not drafting him. But you can't discount his contributions either.
Yeah, but I mean, at the same time,
with that being said, then where do you value him and where do you rate him?
He has to be on the field. I'm not saying they're struggling just because of him, but he's a big part of the reason that they're struggling right now.
What about the injuries to their secondary?
Of course, I mean, that's defense is always going to be a big part of it. You got injuries in your secondary, you know, you don't got Terry on the top.
We're talking like they're 1-3, yo.
They are still winning. They're just winning ugly. So that's the thing. My question.
You play
my question
to win
was,
the game. You don't play
question,
just play.
You play. My question originally was, how come the offense isn't looking so super? I didn't say, like, why are they losing? They're still winning.
No, I understand, but it's just the way we're talking. Right. We're talking like
right.
they, you know, we're talking like.
We pulling the casket out. And all right,
you
well.
3-1.
What's up with your man T.O.? He went wild this weekend. Even though the Bungles dropped another game, T.O. had a monster game. Bad for me because I got Chad in the fantasy league, but whatever. He had how many catches for 221 yards, something like that?
12.
12 catches, 221 yards. He still got it?
Let me weigh in on this. I'm gonna speak and say I'm gonna jump out here and say that not only does he still have it, it's not even a question of whether he ever lost it. I've heard reports from sources in Buffalo that while Trent Edwards couldn't get the ball out, no rainbow, corners were still playing very soft off of him as if they didn't want to get run by the old dude. They're still scared of T.O. And the reason that NFL GMs are hesitant to take a risk on him, people think it's because he tears the locker room up and it's because he brings all of the shenanigans and coonery with him. It's not that. It's how long do you expect a 36 or 37-year-old athlete to perform as if they're 25? So I don't want to take a risk, and he's always going to come in and ask for a 3-year deal, $5 million a season, and you don't want to pay that to somebody of his age. So you got to continually give him 1-year deals, but you know what you're getting. That dude is as – yo, he's as good as he ever was.
I would give it to him. I just backload the contract before I got to pay him the big amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah, he still got it. Just like Brad said, I think he still is capable of being a potent top, you know, top four, top five receiver in the league. But playing with Trent Edwards, that's like going to – that'll set you back.
Was it Trent Edwards or was it that line? Was it that line in Buffalo? Because Trent Edwards was on his back like he was a $2 Jezebel.
Yeah. But he
yeah,
I don't know.
Probably a combination of both.
In the chat room, I agree with what's being said in the chat room. I'm actually chiming in with the people, but they're talking about Carson Palmer and how he no longer is the same player that he once was. Naran is saying that he's not the same player, and most 215 is saying he's trash truck juice. And, you know, what you guys think about Carson Palmer? Because I agree. I actually sent you a text during the game, like, yo, what happened to the dude?
He's not the player he once was, but he's not Trent Edwards either, so.
I mean, he's not Trent Edwards.
And Naran said whoever said T.O. is top five need to stop smoking that ooh-wee.
Who said he's top five?
TJ.
I said he still could be top five as a quarterback.
I believe that he could be with the right in the right system with the right quarterback and him getting the touches.
I definitely believe he could be.
Yo,
well, let me throw this out there real quick. If anybody out there wants to weigh in on the conversation, you can hit us up at 323-410-0012. That's 323-410-0012. Go ahead, Jimmy.
I was just saying, if y'all think that he could be top five, I think y'all are practicing black protectionism because there's no way he could be top five. I'm taking Andre Johnson, Chad Johnson, and other. There's like three Johnsons, Paul, no rainbow, that I take before him. And then you talk about Fitzgerald, Anquan Boldin. I mean, you think he could still be top five?
But I think you're saying that he can't be top five black on black.
But I mean, yeah, I definitely take Andre Johnson. You got
black on black crime.
That's black on black crime, yeah.
Anquan Boldin, Larry Fitzgerald.
Hey, look.
Deshaun Jackson.
I mean, that's about it, though. That's three, though. I only got three.
Andre Johnson.
I wouldn't put Deshaun Jackson in one dimension,
right?
Deshaun Jackson is one dimensional. I wouldn't put him over T.O.
I was just saying,
T.O. is a different type of receiver, too. He's the type that will go, like, well, he used to be, and I still think he can be, but, like, catch it over the middle or go long. He don't have the greatest hands, but the fact that he can catch the ball all over the field
and
play in
that
type of offense.
My point is, how can you be a top five receiver without good hands, Paul? Like, that right there is
something.
So
do you think the
other
guy is running? Yo, Porgy the King said, hey, listen, in the chat room, Porgy the King said, PJ, Porgy the King said he ain't even a top five reality show.
Yeah, he ain't got a top five reality show.
We agree there.
But I got him.
I totally agree there.
I still got him in the top five, man.
I don't have him in the top five, but that's not so much because of his capability and talent. That's because of the situation. I think that everybody that you're naming, Jimmy, out there has the benefit of being in their system for a length of time, having a rapport with their quarterback, and being the go-to guy definitively on their respective teams. So, really, if we're questioning talent...
Megatron is getting thrown to by Sean Hill. Megatron is playing with the Lions. They're inconsistent any way you want to look at it. He's not better than Megatron. There's no way you can tell me he's better than Megatron. No, he's not better than the Bull.
Megatron
right
is
now,
Optimus Prime,
hey,
man.
Is Dio better than Miles Austin right now? What do y'all think?
Of course. Let's not even bring him. The only thing Miles Austin got going for him is light-skinned brothers are back and Kim Kardashian and his John. Come on, man.
Miles put up some gaudy stats, though. I'm not saying he's better than Theo. I'm just saying, dude put up some gaudy numbers. But look.
Well, if that's the case, Austin Collie is better than
Theo. Pierre Garçon.
He's not better than Megatron.
In one season.
He's not better than Megatron. If Megatron played on the court, he might score 40.
Out there that don't know who Megatron is, Jimmy, spell that out for him.
Play. Megatron is his son,
man. Listen,
listen. Speaking of old dudes, what about LaDainian Tomlinson, man? He looked like he was the fountain of youth last week. And I ain't saying youth with an F. Youth.
Let me speak on that. Because when the Jets signed LaDainian and I saw that he only averaged 3.3 yards a carry last year in San Diego, and he was basically ineffective, rushed for about 700-800 yards. I was like, man, you know, I think the Jets downgraded by letting Thomas Jones go, and who's a more powerful runner than LaDainian, and signing LaDainian, especially I didn't expect him to be able to play in the cold weather in New York. Now, that still has yet to be seen, but the way he's been looking on TV, scoring these touchdowns and catching passes – you know, out the backfield, I mean, he looks like the LaDainian in San Diego, and everybody was rushing to get him for the fantasy football league.
Our sources from Jet Camp were telling us that in practice, dude had slimmed down 10 pounds, pause, had picked his speed up, had done a lot of speed work over the summer, and had also been doing a lot of core work with the Pilates and back eczema massages. So I had a feeling that he was going to come back with a vengeance. Now the question is, really, can they keep his touches, no rainbow, to a number that keeps him healthy? He's not the type of dude where you want to hand the ball off to him 25 to 30 times a game, but if you keep his touches between 15 and 20.
They should be able to because they have another viable running back. So
Sean Green,
get the ball 30 times, but – I remember you and I had that conversation. We were riding somewhere, and you were basically telling me that LaDainian was going to end up being the feature back, and it looks like, at this point, it looked like you're going to be right. Because he was shaking dude's ankles off last week like he was still.
So he looked like Westbrook not 2006.
Yeah. So what about your boy what's his name?
Dre Cash, homie.
Randy Moss, back in Minnesota. Yo, first of all, how does Belichick pull this off? He gets Randy Moss for a fourth round pick. Well, actually, I know how.
Actually,
because I've been asking that question all week, but I think I just answered it for myself. And what I was about to say, audience, is how do you get him for a fourth round pick, and then you get rid of him and get a third round pick? But I remember when they were getting him from Oakland, everything was blowing up in Oakland, so they were just desperate to get rid of him. So I don't think
they were dumping assets.
I don't think it was a value thing. I think they were just trying to get rid of him and get what they could, cut their losses, and move on. Because even back then, everybody knew Randy Moss wasn't just worth a fourth round pick.
Dez, as a fan, I'm excited. A fan of the game, I'm excited for the Vikings because I think we may have an opportunity to see the last hurrah of some pretty special cats and players in the league. But as a business, from a business mind, I think Bill Belichick is one of the greatest personnel minds the world has ever seen in sports. Show. Can you? I know that you're kind of aware of their picks. Can you kind of run down the picks that they've acquired over the last, like, two seasons? Because that's really the great side of this story.
Going into next draft, they have two picks in each of the first four rounds, something like that.
Yo, he's a beast.
So they're about to retool for another run for, you know, in the beginning of this decade. Jimmy, how does Moss help the Vikings?
Well, here's a couple things about that whole trade. Belichick has stockpiled these draft picks, but see, the one thing that he has going for him is the fact that he has job security. Now, why I say that is because he doesn't have to win now. A lot of these coaches are making these quarterback decisions because they have no job security. The owners aren't giving them an option, you know, opportunity to build teams.
Great point.
So they have to win now. So with him being able to do that, you know, that gives him an opportunity to build, you know, a franchise in a sense as opposed to winning year to year. Now, in terms of what Moss is going to do for the Vikings, we all know that when Randy Moss gets traded or goes to a new team, he always, you know, puts forth his best effort. And, you know, but the problem is, it's not a problem, but he still has Brett Favre as his quarterback. Now, you know, they really want to put up Gordy. Here's the thing. They want to put up Gordy regular season numbers, but when it comes down to crunch time, what's going to happen at that point? Is Favre going to do like he did when they played the Giants, when he was a Packer in the playoffs and threw the pick to lose the game? Or are he going to do like he did when he was a Packer and he threw the pick in the Eagles game? Or when he was a Viking and he threw the pick against the Giants? You get my point. I can name six playoff games that he lost due to throwing interceptions. And to quote myself, it's like sometimes it's not about the passes you throw, it's about the passes you don't throw. And this guy right here, we'll see what he does. I think in a regular season it's going to be a lot of hype going to the playoffs. But come crunch time, let me see what he's going to do then.
PJ, Randy Moss.
What the chat room saying about this?
They ain't weighing on this one yet. Somebody just said Mopes 215 just said Belichick is a coaching guy, but nothing about Randy Moss. PJ, you got anything on Randy Moss?
Yeah, I don't know that. Kind of like what Jimmy was saying, I don't know if Randy Moss is going to make too much of a difference out there. You know, when Brett decides to drop back, close his eyes, and throw it up, at least when he gets Rice back, he'll have two sides he can throw it to because you figure he could throw it to Moss's side or Rice's side. So, fortunately, they have two receivers that like to go up and grab the ball, pause.
And
that'll help him out. I don't think that, like, I mean, Randy is going to be, you know, when the new change comes and the
great cash, homie.
Yo,
exactly.
The
player try to put their best foot forward and try to get gaudy numbers.
Great cash,
we'll see
homie.
What happens. I mean, there's nobody in the NFC that's really standing out and saying this is my conference. So you know,
we got a caller, y'all. We got a caller.
All right, I'll take that.
Okay.
All right, caller, you're in the war room. What's your name? Where you calling from? 267-701.
Oh, just Nyran from Philly. What's up, fellas?
Nah, what up? What up, dog?
What's up, Nyran?
Nah, what's good?
What's
good,
chilling. Man? What's the talk topic? Since y'all on topic of Belichick, I always had this question. I wonder if you guys could weigh on it. A lot of times, regardless of sports, people downgrade players because of front office management boos. Like we discussed, like Barry versus Emmitt, everyone goes, well, Emmitt had a great offensive line. He didn't get touched till 5 yards down the line. But is that really Emmitt's fault? That Jerry Jones is a good Jerry Jones type of guy. Jim Johnson
isn't
Jim
fair. Johnson.
What was they coach? Oh, what was they coach name? I'm not really counting.
Barry
Switzer. I don't really care. Yeah, no.
Jimmy Johnson.
Barry
Switzer.
Jimmy Johnson. Cousin. Right. So the fact that Jimmy Johnson was a good talent scout, it's like, how would I word that? And debate, dude,
you think that discredit?
Right.
Discredit
Wayne Fine.
You have a good offensive line.
Because you have a good front office that knows how to dress.
Yeah, and Belichick is in that category. One thing I do question about Belichick, though, is because it seems like in the media, even amongst fans, he's looked at as a coaching god. And it seems like when certain things happen to certain teams or certain players or certain coaches, you know, their reputation might get ruined. But this guy was proven to be doing a little bit of cheating, but it seems to have done nothing. This team
well,
has done nothing
you,
to his reputation.
Because he won 3 Super Bowls. Listen, once you win a Super Bowl, you can get away with doing whatever you want to do.
Yeah, but the stuff that they were doing was during 3 years.
Great cash, homie.
It doesn't matter. Like, for argument's sake, we were just talking, I was just giving you some of the games that Brett Favre lost. If he never won that one Super Bowl, I guarantee you most people would feel the same way I feel and look at the games and say the same thing I say. But the fact of the matter is he's considered a Super Bowl winning quarterback. The same with coaches. Some coaches only have their jobs because they won Super Bowl. Like if you think about it, right? Look at Mike Shanahan.
That's the ultimate pass that you get. Once you win a bowl, you get a pass.
Mike Shanahan is considered a genius. How many Super Bowls has Mike Shanahan won without John Elway?
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel what you're saying, and I know that's the reason, but my question is, like, I mean, my point is they were doing the cheating while they were winning the Super Bowl.
If you ain't cheating, you ain't trying hard enough to win.
All right, but Naren, thanks for your call, man.
Hey, man, because, I mean, while they were winning and building up their wins and moving through the games and through the season, if they were cheating – And stealing, like, calls or whatever they were doing, then, I mean, that helped. But, I mean, I don't know. Like you said, it's hard to tell. It's hard to put your finger on it.
I can do a lot of stuff when I know what the other team is about to do.
It's also when it came out. It didn't come out to after the fact. It didn't come out until a couple of years later. So that also
I get that part, Jim. I'm just saying, even though it came out later, why is it that nobody looks at him differently now?
Hey,
they went undefeated after it came out. That's probably why.
Yeah, and they didn't win the bowl.
I'll say this.
Bottom line, Kill, they won the bowl when they were cheating. They went undefeated, but they didn't win the bowl after they stopped cheating.
When I look at dude, I don't just look at him as just the coach, but to me he represents almost all facets of the business side of the Patriots. And when I say business, not obviously not marketing and merchandising, but player personnel, strategy, long-term, mid-term, short-term, as well as coaching. And I look at what he's doing with personnel and the way that he basically keeps an assembly line of talent running in. To a lesser degree, I'll go ahead and give Andy Reid that type of a credit as well, though he's a horrible game caller and game manager. He's still a premier talent guy, a premier draft day guy. And that's really where I look at Belichick and say, yo, he's a Don. When it comes to game time, game management, I'm like, he did cheat. And that's not what's up. But it's a reality of life. And then also moving on to the point that the caller made, that Naren made about Emmett, and the circumstances.
Right, don't get off the point, man. We got to move on, man. You're about to start a whole new – that's one of our best ever topics is coming up.
All right, cool. I get with it then.
Yeah.
All right, because look,
we run behind, and we got a topic. We all know Barry's overrated.
Oh, yeah, what up? I wanted to get into that Eagles-Redskins game and Vic getting injured, Kyle coming in, but look like we're probably going to have to move past that to get into our main topic. Donovan did get his standing ovation in Philly. You know, I don't know what the media was expecting, but he got his standing ovation. Fine, leave us alone now. Mike Vick did get injured in the game. We actually interviewed Mike Vick about his injury. This is what he had to say.
Mike, were you really sick this week? What was the problem?
I broke my back.
What do you mean by that? Your
back is broken.
What, a vertebrae or
well,
what portion?
Spinal.
My bad, that was the wrong Mike. But look, we just gonna go ahead and skip this last media blast. Y'all know how to get in contact with us. If y'all wanna weigh in on this topic or our next topic, which is the legacy of Donovan McNabb, just give us a call at 323-410-0012. Press 1 and we'll try to get to you. Jimmy, take it away.
All right, well, you want to talk about the legacy of one Donovan McNabb, huh?
Donovan McNabb. I didn't know
but
that.
You know what? We all know that how you know I feel about McNabb, Paul, in terms of his ability. But I want you guys to tell me, you know, what are his flaws, and actually go through these statistics, because everybody always tells me, well, McNabb's stats are this and his stats are that. Like, but are they really? When you really look at it. So from a football standpoint, I want you guys to tell me how you feel about McNabb, not just that he's garbage or he stinks, but break down why you believe what you believe.
Let me take this real quick because, yeah, basically what we want to know and we want to ask from the callers is he a Hall of Fame quarterback? I hear yes all the time, and I kind of think that he will get into the Hall of Fame, but it would be for reasons way beyond everything he did on the football field. The stuff that I hear in arguments, let's bring the stuff up before you guys even call in and start saying these excuses. People tell me his stats speak for him, for itself. He had no receivers. He's the greatest Eagle quarterback. His winning percentage and then the capper, you know, when we're breaking it down to somebody, oh, you're just hating on Donovan. Nobody hates Donovan except for Brad, maybe Jimmy a little bit. Let's go to the stats thing. The stats thing is way overrated because compared to other – future Hall of Fame quarterbacks that are in the league right now, right this minute, his stats aren't that gaudy. He's a sub 60% completion rate quarterback for his career. That's not good. His career rating is 86.6. That's not good. That's not terrible, but that's not good. I mean, Elway is actually tied with him for the, you know, the same rating, but Elway played in three different systems during his career. His yardage. Let me put something into perspective by comparing him to the other elite quarterbacks of his era. And people try to say to me sometimes, you can't compare him to Peyton and Brady. Why not? He made the same kind of money as Peyton and Brady. Peyton Manning came into the league 1 year before Donovan McNabb. Peyton Manning has 18,000 more yards than Donovan McNabb. That's five seasons worth of yards, and people are going to sit here and tell me that this guy has gaudy statistics. Dude has five seasons more yards than Donovan, and he played one more season. Let's go to Brady.
Can you repeat the part of this stuff where you said?
Listen, Donovan has about 2,000 more yards than Brady. But let me tell you something on that end. Brady came into the league the year after Donovan. Brady threw three passes in his rookie year. So basically his rookie year was a wash. Then Brady had an injury where he missed the whole season. That season was a wash. Now Donovan has been out for the season a few times, but he's never played less than 9 games in a season. So if this guy comes in a year after you, his first season was a wash, and he had a knee injury that kept him out a whole other season, that's basically Donovan playing 3 more seasons than Tom Brady, and he's only up on him by 2,000 yards. Brady will catch him by next year. So where everybody gets this whole gaudy statistic thing from, I'm not sure. I'll let somebody else weigh in, and I'll get my points out.
Real quick.
Y'all want to take that? Y'all want to
take
that?
Real quick.
I just want to say something about the chat room. The chat room, Broth223 says, the bottom line is Drew Bledsoe's stats are greater than McNabb's stats. Enough said.
Enough said.
We got a caller. We got a caller.
Right. All right, go ahead. You want me to take it?
I'll take it. Caller, welcome to the War Room. Where are you calling from? 518-683.
What's going on, guys? This is Brock from the chat room. I was just going to come in and give my little synopsis of why Donovan McNabb will never be a Hall of Famer.
We love you already.
Assuming he doesn't win a Super Bowl with wherever he ends up going. I mean,
not going to happen.
I think he's like you already said, Drew Bledsoe's stats are comparable to Donovan McNabb's, and I mean, there's only I think four quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame right now who are missing both a Super Bowl win or an MVP award. Donovan has neither. Every other quarterback, except for four, have at least one. One of them was Warren Moon, who went to, like, 10 Pro Bowls.
Right.
So there's that. Another one was Jim Kelly. He made it to four Super Bowls. So, I mean, if Donovan made it to four Super Bowls and not five NFC Championship games, I could see where they would put him in.
I agree with you. My only thing is, you know, the Hall of Fame is a subjective vote by the media. So if you've been good to the media over the years, they'll put you in. Look at a case like Art Monk. Art Monk, when he retired, held most of the receiving records out there. It took him so many years to get into the Hall of Fame because the media considered him an a-hole because he never really wanted to speak to him. So I definitely agree with what you're saying and all the statistics that you're giving. Same thing that we say. I just have a feeling that they're going to put him in. They really want him in there for some reason. But go ahead. Finish making your point before we let you go.
Well, the only guy who I can find that's even close to Donovan McNabb as far as statistics and accolades is Sonny Jurgensen. And his story is pretty much the same as Donovan McNabb's, I mean, without all the drama, you know, but as a player, he had about five or six injury-filled seasons with the Eagles. And
he's another one from the Eagles to the Redskins.
Yeah, and then he went to the Redskins and did a whole bunch there. But the one thing that Sonny Jurgensen has that Donovan never did, Donovan never read the league in, I think, any major statistical category.
Anything ever.
Maybe just rushing for a quarterback, which is not an impressive stat to me. You know, I don't really want my quarterback running all the time. And he did stop, but when they actually needed him to run, you know, he seemed like he didn't want to run anymore. But, yeah.
So you're definitely right,
but we got to move on. Ross, thank you for your call. We really appreciate it. We hope you listen every week and call in every week. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot.
All right. All right. Does somebody want to make a point off of that? That was a really good call. I'm not saying that because he agrees with us, but you know, everybody keeps citing the numbers, but I don't really think they look at the numbers when they say that. I mean,
I want to make one comment. And my comment is, I had this argument this past week due to the fact that how Donovan and the Redskins won the game, and you know, he started talking his trash after the game. First off, that's real corny. He didn't say anything leading up to the game because he knew he still had to go on the field. But once he got on the field and the game was over, all of a sudden they made a mistake. He didn't show anything that made me think that the Eagles made a mistake, for one. The guy completed 8 passes, right?
About 25 yards!
Yo, 4 of them were screen passes, right? And so that means that you could – and in the one where he threw the ball downfield and the Jabroni fell out of bounds, that was because the pass was a bad pass. But even beyond that, someone tells me after the game that he's the Eagles' winningest quarterback. The problem is Andy Reid. You have to get rid of Andy Reid because McNabb is the Eagles' winningest quarterback. My thing is, Dodo, if McNabb has those wins, guess who else has those wins? Andy Reid is the Eagles' winningest coach. So what are you saying? That makes no sense. And second off, football is the ultimate team sport. So quarterback wins to me are really fraudulent because let me tell you why. Tom Brady got his 100th win on Monday night, but he didn't even play. He didn't have to play that well. He scored on special teams twice in defense, and he got his 100th win.
Offense got a day off. They got a night off on Monday.
So that's my point. My point is, so if he's the winningest quarterback in Eagles franchise,
right,
what does that actually mean? Jim Johnson, RIP. Young
linebacker Bud Nickovich get a win.
Yo,
yeah,
Jim
like
Johnson is the reason why they won and went to those championship games, not Mick throwing the dirt. That's all I got to say. I'll be awesome. You can take it over.
Jim Johnson is my uncle, by the way. Beautiful
yeah.
service at his funeral. You know, I'm not going to belabor the point. I think that we talk about this dude too much, and hopefully
this over with.
This will lay it to rest. I think Dr. Bayon has some beautiful stats compiled to sort of show and demonstrate statistically what Donovan's legacy is by the numbers. I see a cat that came in the league, fits your stereotypical good guy, non-abrasive, non-system challenging black quarterback. And it was such a wonderful thing at the time it happened for mainstream media. They latched on to this dude, and they've never let go. Because when you put him in front of the camera, he says all the right cliches, says all the right things. He's never in trouble with the law. He's just perceived as a genuine, all-around good dude. So that's marketable to America. That's marketable
wait, hold
to
on,
your
hold on,
to
B.
Your, me.
Hold on, B. Austin.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, is that my microphone or you?
No, go ahead. It's not mine.
I was about to say, which, by the way, isn't entirely true. I have a story. I can't say it on the air because I didn't even get permission to tell this story. But he's not the nice guy that he's perceived to be. I tell you, brothers, when we have our little call afterwards, what I'm talking about. But
I was going to get to that. I have a personal story as well. I don't have permission, but I'm going to say it anyway.
No, but you know what? Because we're doing a statistical breakdown. It's not even personal, so we don't even need to share that kind of stuff. Because that's the kind of stuff we're going to tell, you know, have people saying, well, y'all hating on the dude. Well, this isn't hate, because Brad just mentioned some numbers that Dr. Bayon composed. Let me just say a few of them before you finish, Austin. Remember, I'm sure everybody remembers how in our past talks about McNabb, we always speak about his big game performances, and everybody's talking about how many playoff games he wins, which is bogus because defense won most of those playoff games. He balled against the Bears. Other games, he could basically manage the game because we overmatched teams. Here's proof. Of his of the active QBs now, he's the ninth rated passer in the league with an 86.6 rating. His playoff quarterback rating for his entire season drops when he gets
career,
into the playoffs.
His entire career.
77.2 rated passer in the playoffs. Now who's going to tell me that he's a big game guy if he gets worse in the playoffs? It's proven. What do people say? I'm not even a statistical guy. Stats don't tell the whole story, in my opinion, but every time I'm arguing about these guys, What do people say? They want to quote Jay-Z. Well, women lie, men lie, women lie, numbers don't. Well, if that's your theory and numbers don't lie, we just gave you numbers stating our point that this dude isn't as good as you think he is. He gets worse in the playoffs. He's never won an MVP. He's a sub 60% passer. Like, what more do you people need to know?
He was an injury shoo-in on his Pro Bowls, three of them.
Okay. Right. And what happened when he got injured, B-Rat? A.J. Philly and Ty Detmer steps in and goes 5-1, and the team still gets a number one seed into the playoffs. The only reason they lost that one game to the Giants because the reliable David Akers missed a field goal. What happens when Jeff Garcia is the backup quarterback, yo, and he gets injured? Somebody else can go ahead and tell me.
The thing about McNabb is that I think what really hurt him and his credibility, especially here in Philadelphia, is that he never showed up in the biggest stage. Like, a lot of times, like you just mentioned, that his numbers, when we look at these statistics, his numbers drop off significantly in the postseason. His quarterback rating, his yards, everything. I mean, if you're looking at just statistics alone, and you look at his completions, yards, and his rating, in the playoffs it gets worse. And he's just not the guy that would excel when the bright lights are on. And that's one thing. He can get you there. Like, he can get you there. He can play
okay. He can, you know, not ruin the game. He's not an interception machine. He's not going to throw the game for you. But when he gets to the biggest stage, he doesn't show up. Like, the throwing up in the Super Bowl, there's just certain things. I mean, everybody talks about all these NFC championships, but do they look at his performance in these championships? I mean,
they don't. They're just looking at the fact that he's the quarterback of the team. And, PJ, you just made a point.
He's landing a star in that Carolina.
Yeah.
In the NFC championship
next
in
year.
Carolina.
But look, one point you just made.
It's just the thing is, and that's what hurt. Like, he's gotten us so far, and he keeps getting us that far. He never gets over the hump. And I think that's where a lot of frustration comes out of Philadelphia. Not saying he's a bad quarterback, but you expect the guy that got you there five times to at least get you to a championship once you get to the game before it five times.
One point you just made is another thing that a lot of people bring up, his touchdown to interception ratio. Okay, we run a West Coast style with a lot of dinks and dunks for most of his career. We didn't even really stretch the field and open up until T.O. came. And when you have a quarterback who throws low into the ground a lot, you're not going to get a lot of interceptions. He doesn't take a lot of chances. He's not Brett Favre, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. You know, it's good that he doesn't take chances.
Yeah.
He knows he can't do anything.
Remember that early in his career, all he did was dink and dunk, just like you said, before T.O. came? Bro, their offense was a dink and dunk machine.
When he first started, the offense looked like it did with Cobb the other day, and everybody's calling Cobb a bum. The same way
it looked like the early days of McNabb.
It looked like our offense reverted 9 years, but they're not giving dude a chance. But they gave this guy 11 years, and everybody's saying he's going to the Hall of Fame. But what I wanted to make a point on, which you said, the interception ratio, he didn't throw them regularly. But he threw them at the most inopportune times. When he had to make a play, when he had to try to get the ball somewhere, he threw them. It doesn't matter if you don't throw them. If you throw them in the fourth quarter.
Two interceptions in the same area, back to back. Remember they called one back, and threw another one the next.
In the Super Bowl.
But, you know, just to go back to numbers real quick. If you look at this past game, what was his quarterback rating against the Eagles in this past game?
60.2.
60.
But listen, even worse than that. Even worse than that, do you know what his rating was for the second half of the game?
Like,
it was 1.7%. Yo, 1.7%.
0.7.
No, 1.7.
That was his rating.
1.7. Damn.
Yo,
I
would love to have.
I don't doubt that. I'm not surprised.
1.7% in the second half.
This is what people don't.
He doesn't show up. That's all I'm saying. It's not personal with McNabb. It's just that we dealt with this man as Eagles fans, dealt with him for a long time. He keeps getting us there, and we're seeing the same thing. Like, it's the same result. Like, nobody got excited when we got to the NFC Championship to play Arizona because we didn't feel confident that McNabb was going to make it happen. Not that it's all with him, but being the leader of the team.
And in that game, I can say that was the one time that the defense let us down. However, we still had time to drive, and he couldn't even get us a first down.
Is that the game where he threw the defense under the bus?
You said that at the end of that game, he put it on the defense, though. He said in the post-game conference, he said, I did what I had to do. You know what I'm saying? Like, as if to say the defense didn't. Everybody knows that the defense didn't.
Kurt Warner was down with a last, you know, second drive to make, he made it. He left us a good 2 minutes and 32 seconds, and we couldn't even get a first down. And Hank Basket was wide open for one play, and dude just threw it to, like, Australia somewhere. So
I need people to watch the game. One thing I was going to say,
his rating in four NFC Championship games, I couldn't find the info yet for the most recent NFC Championship game, when they lost to the Cardinals. But in four NFC Championship games, first four, his rating dropped even lower to 65. And also, you know, Dab, you alluded to him running earlier than stopped. In his first 5 years in the league, I think he was a better quarterback because he ran more, and then the safety or the linebacker would have to spy on him, hence taking out a defender from the secondary, giving him easier passing angles and better passing lanes. And he ran for an average of 400 yards per season his first 5 years. His second 5 years, when he said, you know what, I'm just not going to run, I'm just going to try to really be a pocket passer, his yards dropped to 160 yards per season. But now you don't have to worry about that spy. The defense can put another person
in the in secondary. In coverage, and now, you know, it's hard for him to complete passes. His percentages, you know, continue to drop. And, yeah, that's all I wanted to share on Mr. McNabb.
Yeah, see, that's something that I didn't even know. I didn't know his rating was so low in NFC Championship games. I mean, this is the stuff that people just refuse to listen to. I'm pretty sure everybody that we argue with, McNabb, if they're not listening now, we send them the replay and they listen to the show, it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter because it's all about what doodle lip Tom Jackson says on the match, on the show on ESPN, you know, with all their black protectionism going on that set. Yo, I'm not saying the dude was
I'm saying the dude wasn't clutch.
And for all these gaudy statistics that people keep talking about, have we mentioned that he's never, ever had a 4,000-yard season?
Not even a year
with T.O.? He's never had a 4,000-yard season. He's only come close twice. 39-16, was that last year or the season before, and 38-something the year we went to the Super Bowl. So, I mean, I'm not saying that those numbers were bad, but don't come to me talking about he's going to the Hall of Fame. Look at his numbers. What numbers?
Well, I think the bottom line is this. I think the bottom line is the fact of the matter is he's just not an elite quarterback. People want to put him up there with Manning and Brady and these guys. He's not an elite quarterback. I mean, personally, I'd rather have Spencer Wetz at quarterback than McNabb. Dude doesn't win in the clutch at all. And even beyond that, it's just that he's not a leader. If your quarterback has to be a leader, doesn't say it's the defense's fault. Or even beyond that, wasn't it last year when they lost like two games to the Cowboys and they got smacked both times? He said, "Well, we had a good season because we won 11 games."
Yeah, that's what PJ was saying before.
He doesn't like to lose, but he doesn't hate to lose.
Like, you can't say anything.
Exactly. He doesn't hate. It doesn't bother him. He never fit the fabric of Philadelphia because he was never really like that outward emotional type of player like a Barkley or Iverson, the way people gravitate towards him. Like, those guys didn't do stuff like that. Like, I mean, they just, like, he just throws people under the bus to me. Like, I feel like, just like this past Sunday when he was like, yeah, you know, everybody makes mistakes. And just like y'all with Devin, Jimmy, y'all was saying, leading up to that game, even since he got traded, he never gave any indication that he felt like they made a mistake by doing that. He was, like, acting like he was cool. Oh, it's no big deal. Well, you know, things happen in life. You can't change. So it was all good. And then his first chance that he gets on the stage to start crowing, he does it. Like, that's to me, that's just corny, especially when you had a bad game. Why not say something like, yeah, you know, this win meant a lot to me. I appreciate y'all helping me out. You know what I'm saying? Something to that effect. I mean, you don't got to try to take a shot at them.
I don't mind when athletes speak their mind. But like you said, if that's how you felt, say it from the door. Say it from the door.
Don't wait until now because he lost the game.
Yeah,
let me ask you a question real quick. What do you say to all those people that say, well, he never had a receiver or any teammates to play with? What's your answer to that question?
My answer to that question is Thomas Brady. Like, come on. Troy Brown, when we have this argument, it's funny that when we have McNabb arguments, Troy Brown always comes up for some reason because I ask people all the time, well, what receivers did Brady have when he was winning Super Bowls? And the people always say Troy Brown. First of all, Troy Brown's like my height, and he's ugly. Troy Brown, if you people didn't know, for his career averaged 434 yards per season. You don't believe me? Look it up. Troy Brown's a bum. He's a bum that Brady made better because Brady is the truth. And if you have an elite quarterback, he will make people better. And so I don't want to hear the Paxton and trash and all that kind of stuff and who did they have. He had a few 1,000-yard receivers in his time, and we still don't have any rings. So,
great.
I mean,
great
all I say is Tom Brady.
Don't allow you to make excuses for them. There's no need.
I mean, come on. If you are elite, then you make Tom Paxton a better team. Yo, but listen,
I mean, they're making Sports Center and becoming like headliners just because a few years ago, professional receivers, they're going to catch it if you put the ball there. McNabb is just incredibly inaccurate, like you said there earlier. Always throws him to the ground. And the West Coast offense, where your offense is predicated on the run after the catch, And this guy's throwing passes. The majority of his passes are either low or behind the receiver. That negates the whole purpose of the play. So it's just like he never, and I guess he never got that. Or, you know, maybe he should was just in the wrong system, but he just wasn't effective.
He definitely was in the wrong system, which wasn't his fault. But, look, it's been 11 years. If you haven't learned by now and people are still giving you excuses of being in the wrong system, I mean, right. Like, come on, something got to give. Like on draft day a few years ago, when the seventh round came, first of all, when the seventh round came and they said Marcus Colston, and everybody probably was like, who the hell is Marcus Colston? But I'm going to take that back, because who the hell was watching the seventh round? Who was watching the seventh round? Who even saw Marcus Colston get picked? He's playing with an elite QB, and he's excelling. He's become a good receiver because it doesn't, you know, he don't have to twist into a pretzel to catch the ball.
Yo, Austin Collie is going to the Pro Bowl this year.
Yo.
Austin Collie. And the funny thing about that is...
Peyton Manning makes me question whether Marvin Harrison was really as good as we thought he was. He couldn't get a job after he left. Seriously.
I ain't going to go that far.
Marvin, hometown boy. But look, he was fast. He definitely, you know, can run the deep routes. But, yo, he couldn't get a job after he left Peyton.
That's true.
Think about this, though.
That was age and older, buddy.
He was still.
Yo, the thing about that is, like, just to go back to that point the other day, Dad. Remember we were having an argument with somebody on Twitter, and they were telling us that Brady has played with Deion Branch, and that's why Brady was excelling because he had Deion Branch. What has Deion Branch done since he left there, other than steal money from Seattle?
Yo, and he said he was a Super Bowl MVP. Okay, that's one game. Anybody, a man, the light can shine on the dog's ass at any given time.
Timmy Smith.
Exactly. Timmy Smith, Washington Redskins. Timmy Smith.
Yo.
He had a monster Super Bowl game. Yo, people in Washington forgot who he was 2 days after the Super Bowl. They didn't know who he was on the parade float. Who that?
Exactly.
Why he sitting up there? Come on.
Exactly. Yo, Peyton Manning threw a touchdown to Blair White, yo.
I don't even know who that is, man. Seriously.
And then all we're saying right now, you know, basically all the points that we're making are what distinguishes a good quarterback from a great quarterback. So this is why we don't put Donovan McNabb in the great quarterback category with the quarterback that we're comparing him with, because that's what we're trying to say. If he doesn't do the things that those elite great quarterbacks have done with the talent around them.
Do it in the game.
Word. I'll give him above average. I'll go as far as to give him good. He's not a great quarterback. Go ahead, Austin.
To give him the benefit of his positive attributes, which, you know, War Room World, the hot block commander, I got to go third person on him. We'll go ahead and let y'all know that I am a avid and staunch McNabb detractor.
Can I throw a disclaimer in there real quick? Because from the people that I talk to, they seem to lump us all in the same category. And I try to, you know, differentiate
sometimes.
He's telling you now that he doesn't like the dude, personally, nor his game. I have a problem with his game and all of his stands acting like he's better than
him. I think he's a coward. But the positives, he did come into the league as an exceptional athlete. With a rocket for an arm. And as Akil alluded to earlier, when he was able to present a dual threat, which was running and throwing the ball, I think that it made coordinators have to game plan a lot more. It's kind of like what we talked about with Reggie Bush earlier. The more people one person takes up in a defensive scheme, the better off that offense is. And the more potent, no rainbow, that player is. So when McNabb had to account, when you had to account for McNabb with two people, a DN for containment, a spy for keeping him honest and in the pocket, that was one person that had to stray away from just standard rushing the passer duties, and it was one player that couldn't be in coverage. So I think that as he got older and he listened to the critics and he listened to, you know, the people in his ear, kind of selfishly putting himself first, he kind of dumbed his game down
to try and be a pocket passer to say, well, I can do it too. You know, and that really was, in my estimation, kind of a selfish move because it put his strengths on the back burner for the sake of pride and ego in becoming a pocket passer, which he's not. And even now, that's all he does, and he does not do it well in a system that calls for accuracy and precision. So, you know, that's kind of my knock. He definitely was very athletic. He was very fast, had a very strong arm. You know, was somewhat like a Michael Vick. I don't know if he, we can't go there athletically. He was more of a Vince Young, you know, Vince Dung type of player. And I think that had he remained that, you know, you may have seen different results in some of these big games that he hasn't shown up for. But we're left with reality, and reality is what he is, and the numbers don't support the hype that he gets. My beef with the dude really is that I've seen character traits that show me that he's a coward, and I can't co-sign on any cowardice associated with my Philadelphia Eagles.
Well, listen, real quick, you know, about the greatest quarterback in Eagles history. Okay, people are saying that because he holds all the records now. But when you spend 11 straight years in a pass-happy system, you're going to hold all the passing records? Like, come on, people. Like, let's be smarter fans than that. Because dude is not better than Randall Cunningham. I don't care what you say. And it's questionable whether or not he's better than Jaws. But I'll give you Jaws. Yeah. I'm not giving anybody Randall Cunningham. He's not better than Randall
Who's the best quarterback in Cleveland Browns history?
Probably somebody who ain't that good. Bernie Kosar.
No,
Bernie
So what does that really mean to say you're the best in the team's history that never doesn't have a history of having quarterbacks? You know what I mean? Like,
Jake DeLhomme is the best in Panthers history. Ooh, he's not
Jerry Collins.
Jerry
Collins, but they both are suspect. But that's my point. My point is, what does that really mean? He's the best quarterback. Hall of Fame
Jerry Collins has had multiple 4,000-yard seasons. McNabb hasn't done that yet. And he's not doing it this year because the numbers are going to be even down more this year.
Yeah,
I got to know he's throwing screen. Yo, Shanahan is protecting this young man.
Yeah,
he's throwing him screen passes.
He's definitely
quick
good.
Out.
But look, I want to thank Donovan for 10, 11 great seasons with the Eagles. We didn't get over the hump. You know, I don't think you're as good as everybody else does. But you know, thanks for your service. Good to see you somewhere else.
Yeah,
that's all I got.
You know what?
And this is the last time we're gonna hold this kind of conversation.
Yo, let's get out of here, y'all. We'd like to thank everyone for joining us in the war room this evening. We hope you all enjoyed tonight's show. Please join us next week, same time, same place. We'll discuss the results of week 5 from the NFL season and look ahead to week 6. We'll also talk about the progress of the MLB playoffs. We'll debut our Real Sports Got to Do With It segment with our special guest singer-songwriter, Lauren Wright. And as we'll discuss all the biggest stories in the week of all sports. You don't want to miss it next week. Until then, we'll holler.
Mrs.
Holler.
Yeah.